News. I'm Victor Beatty. The UN envoy to Syria is urging Turkey and Russia to meet and find a way to avert an assault on Syria's northwest Idlib province, the last major rebel stronghold in the country.
We all continue to wish, to ask, to hope, to avoid the battle for Idlib. That remains our firm point.
Speaking Tuesday in Geneva, Stefan de Mistura said he has heard that an escalated assault will commence on or about September 10 and expressed renewed alarm about the civilians that could be affected.
Inside Idlib area, there are 2.9 million people. I repeat it because it's an enormous figure. Now, out of them, 1 million children. Okay? These are not terrorists, 1 million children. Not even the 2.9 million people.
The UN Security Council is to take up the matter Friday. Meanwhile, Russian and Syrian warplanes bombarded areas in western Idlib Tuesday. The head of the Turkish Red Crescent, Kerem Kinik, said more than 20 airstrikes were carried out. The Syrian Observatory for Human Rights said at least 9 people died. The U.S. repeated its warning Tuesday it will respond swiftly to any appropriately if chemical weapons are used in the offensive. Meanwhile, Syrian state media said Israeli warplanes struck targets in the country. A senior Israeli official acknowledged his country has carried out hundreds of such attacks, primarily against Iranian targets inside Syria in the past 2 years. In Libya, a ceasefire signed among armed factions after more than a week of fighting in and around the capital, Tripoli. Elizabeth Throssell is with the UN Human Rights Council.
The parties to the conflict have been firing indiscriminately and using weapons with wide area effects, including rockets, tank shells, and artillery in densely populated residential areas.
Dozens have been killed or wounded. The city's only functioning airport closed. This is VOA News. At least 5 people were killed Tuesday in a second night of clashes between protesters and security forces in the southern Iraqi city of Basra, a Shia stronghold. Hundreds gathered at local government buildings. Some hurled petrol bombs and stones and attempted to block roads, angered over persistent electrical and water shortages, a lack of jobs, and corruption. U.S. UN Ambassador Nikki Haley announced Tuesday President Donald Trump will preside over a Security Council meeting on Iran later this month.
He is calling the meeting to address Iran's violations of international law and the general instability Iran sows throughout the entire Middle East region.
The U.S., which pulled out of the Iran nuclear deal in May, holds the council presidency this month. The session scheduled September 26th, a day after Iran's President Hassan Rouhani addresses the General Assembly. Britain's opposition Labour Party has attempted to end a controversy by formally adopting an internationally accepted definition of anti-Semitism. Rebecca Long-Bailey is a Labour MP.
It was critical today that we reassured the Jewish community and were in complete solidarity with the concerns that they'd raised over the last few months.
Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn, longtime Palestinian rights advocate, has been attacked for not embracing the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance definition. The row has divided Labour as it engages in Britain's preeminent issue, Brexit, from the European Union. South Korean diplomats headed to North Korea Wednesday to prepare the time and agenda for this month's anticipated third Korean summit between the North's leader, Kim Jong-un, and South Korea's President Moon Jae-in in Pyongyang. President Donald Trump, in a Tuesday phone call, expressed to Mr. Moon his hopes for success. The president will meet his South Korean counterpart later this month on the sidelines of the new UN General Assembly session. A powerful typhoon lashed Japan Tuesday, leaving at least 9 dead, thousands stranded at Kansai Airport in the country's south-central region. Jebi is being called the most powerful storm to hit the Japanese island nation in 25 years. According to the group Elephants Without Borders, poachers have killed dozens of elephants in Botswana and removed their tusks. The discovery was made in the course of the last several weeks during an aerial survey. Many were shot with heavy-caliber rifles near watering holes in Botswana's Okavango Delta. U.S. stocks retreated Tuesday in the first session since a 3-day Labor Day holiday weekend, with investors expressing concern over trade tensions. Talks between the U.S. and Canada over a revised free trade deal resumed Wednesday, the benchmark Dow Jones slipping 12 points to 25,952. Meanwhile, e-commerce giant Amazon flirted with $1 trillion in market value Tuesday. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
Morning Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa. I'm James Mbatha in Washington. Today is Wednesday, the 5th day of September, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Cameroon's secessionist movement denies recruiting child fighters.
We are not recruiting youth to go fight for us. Absolutely not. We very well understand it should be in school, and international conventions do not allow the recruitment of teenagers to go and fight wars.
Chris Anu is the Secretary of State for Communication of the Abazonia Separatist Movement. A land rights bill has passed both houses of Liberia's parliament. We'll take one more look at this week's China-Africa summit. And DRC's High Court agrees with the Elections Commission to exclude Jean-Pierre Bemba from the December presidential election.
Let people choose the candidate they want, not them to choose the candidate for people. That's what we are complaining about.
Grace Cabrera is a leading member of the DRC youth movement known as Lucha. We look at progress in LGBTQ rights in Nigeria, and scientists search for sustainable solutions to arming worms. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A spokesman for Cameroon's Abazonian secessionist movement says the group does not recruit child fighters. The group is fighting for the independence of Cameroon's northwest and southwest English-speaking regions. A report Tuesday said five students went missing and their principal badly wounded after unidentified gunmen attacked a high school near Bamenda, the capital of the northwest province. The Cameroon government has in the past called the secessionist movement a terrorist group. Chris Anu, Secretary of State for Communication of the Abazonian Separatist Movement, says the group wants children to be in school. Besides, he says it is against international convention to recruit child fighters. He says the Cameroon government is behind the students' disappearance.
Eyewitnesses said they saw men, French Cameroon military uniforms, picked up these students and took them away, including the principal. And while they were on their way, leaving with the nine, they also picked up some older students who were still on their way to school. Now, today, we saw the picture or video of the principal showing up in the hospital where the face has been blown up. What I can tell you is we have no doubt who did this. French Cameroon government troops did this because they have done it not once, not twice in the past. They did it with Boya University students. They did it in Bamenda University students. And let me tell you why they are doing this. French Cameroon believes that the youth in the southern Cameroon's Ambazonia are the ones fighting them. And that is why the interim government warned parents in Ambazonia, if your environment is not safe, if the schools are not safe, there is no security, do not send your children to school, because French Cameroon soldiers will come and pick them up and claim they are picking up Ambazonia fighters.
But the area where the attack allegedly happened, or where the students are said to have been missing, are areas that are under your control. Are you saying that you are not recruiting students?
Oh, no, we're not recruiting students. The statement I made was French Cameroon has burned down 107 towns and villages in the course of this war currently going on. And United Nations statistics says over 200,000 internally displaced persons are living in the bushes. And so most of the young people are living in the bushes. Now, when they come out, the Republic of Cameroon troops are attacking them, assuming that those of them living in the bushes are the army that is fighting the Republic of Cameroon, which is not the case. No, we are not recruiting youth to go fight for us. Absolutely not. We very well understand they should be in school, and international conventions do not allow the recruitment of teenagers to go and fight wars.
So when you have this thing that you call ghost towns, aren't you stopping or preventing these students from going to school?
No, absolutely not. Ghost towns do not stop any child, anybody, any teacher from going to school. Ghost towns are meant to exert some economic pressure on the regime and not students or schools.
So there is an election coming up next month, October. What is your view of your organization, of your movement on these elections?
Our interim government has banned that election from taking place anywhere in Ambazonia. We have stated very, very unequivocally that October 2017, we declared or proclaimed the restoration of the statehood, the independence of the surrounding Cameroons. And so for French Cameroon to want to force any election on our territory is illegal and an infringement on our territorial integrity. And I can assure you and the world community, we will do everything that we can do as Ambazonians to stop that election. If it means death, we will do it.
Chris Anu is the Secretary of State for Communication of the Ambazonia Separatist Movement of Cameroon. He was speaking with me from the U.S. city of Houston in Texas. A member of the Democratic Republic of Congo's youth movement, known as Lucha, or the Struggle for Change, says the Congolese people, not the Electoral Commission or the courts, should choose their own leaders. This comes after the country's High Court this week sided with Electoral Commission to exclude Jean-Pierre Bemba from participating in the December presidential election. The court cited Bemba's conviction at the International Criminal Court. Lucha member Grace Cabrera says the group, for now, is not supporting any candidate but wants free and fair election. She accused the Congolese security of beating up activists during demonstrations this week against the use of electronic voting machines.
I think the oppression was the hardest ever, because now there was like fighting with us. They were even ready to kill someone, because the way they were making the repression was not actually used. We don't know what was their program, but I think that this is just dangerous for us. Right now, for the activists, this is dangerous because they are ready to stop us even by killing us.
So what was the reason for your demonstration?
We want to stop the machine à voter. The thing they are calling machine à voter is not legal at all. In a country like DRC, we don't need such machines. We just want free elections. We want true elections. So now they are proposing us machine à voter, and this is just unbelievable. And we want to stop that. We are calling for free elections, and we want to stop the machine à voter.
But electronic voting machine should make it faster for people to vote. What is wrong with that?
The voting machine is not possible to be used in DRC, you know. The country doesn't have electricity. The country is just too big. They don't have logistic systems to take those voting machines to villages. So the logistic is not organized. Actually, the voting machine, we are not ready for that at all.
So you're also complaining about the voter list?
Yes, we are complaining about that because it is not possible. When they gave the list, it was about 50%. And for us, that is just not possible. So they are not clear in everything they are doing. We want elections, but we want true elections.
You know that some people like Jean-Pierre Bemba, Katumbe, are not allowed to participate in the election. What's your view on that?
They are playing a game. They don't want to see some people on the list. But for us, that is not the problem. The problem is they allow people to make their choice. If they avoid Jean-Pierre Bemba, Moïse Katumbe, that is not the problem. Now, the problem is who is good for elections, and let people choose the candidates they want, not them to choose the candidates for people. That's what we are complaining about. But for now, Lucha is not supporting nobody. Lucha is supporting free elections. When the time will come for the elections, activists of Lucha will have his own choice. But now the Lucha is not supporting nobody officially.
You talk about the way the police treated the protesters. Did you get permission to protest? Did the police allow you permission to protest?
Yes, they allowed.
So if they allow you to protest, why did they treat you the way you are describing it?
That is what we are not understanding.
Do you intend to protest again?
Yes, we have to. We can't stop. We'll protest again. We are planning for another protest. The sooner possible, we will do it.
Grace Cabrera is a leading member of the DRC youth movement known as Lucha. She was speaking with me from the eastern city of Goma. Today is Wednesday, the 5th day of September, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. Both houses of the Liberian legislature have now passed the long-awaited land rights bill, which gives citizens the right to own their land and its resources. The House of Representatives gives its final approval yesterday, Tuesday, following a unanimous vote. As Moses Garcia Wood reports from Monrovia, the bill now goes to President George Weah for his signature.
Considering the length of time this instrument has taken with the national legislature, and also considering that the House of Elders has spoken, I would like to amend that the document be passed into law immediately, that we concur with the Liberian Senate.
This was the motion from Lofa County Representative Sayu Malone that broke the freeze on the long-awaited passage of a law to protect land ownership in Liberia.
Distinguished honorable ladies and gentlemen, there are 34, not against, one abstention.
The unanimous vote with no dissension shows the resolve of the lawmakers to pass the Land Rights Act. The law has lingered in the legislature since 2014, where it has experienced several roadblocks. Representative Vincent Woolley headed the special committee to review the Land Rights Act.
Our people in the rural area don't have rights to their own land. People have been surviving on the issues of traditional certificates, or perhaps travel certificate, as you may term it to be. That which honor our law does not give legitimacy to anyone or to land ownership. On the other side, our law provides that only the president sign off on public land sale. So it means though in a rural area that have been living on the land for so many decades, they are not the owners of the land. They are all happy. Today is a relief. Today is a new day for our people. And now that Liberians and those who in the rural area can have title now to their own land.
The Liberian government has come under pressure from civil society organizations in the last 4 years to pass the land rights law. The Women Land Rights Task Force is one of the civil society organizations that has been in the vanguard pushing for the passage of the land rights bill. Ilaza Dan is with the Women's NGO Secretariat of Liberia, the group chairing the Women's Land Rights Task Force.
Gender perspective, I would say a meal a lot for women. At least now, when we acquire property, we have title deed as women. We'll also be entitled like how our husbands or boyfriends are entitled. Most often, we are custodian of land deeds, but we don't own those land. If pieces of or parcel of lands are given to us to farm, it's restricted. Either we don't plant cash crops or live trees, like the people say, we are restricted what to plant on those parcel of land that is given to us. I'm so glad until I don't even know how to express it.
The new law gave citizens, particularly rural people, ownership of not only their land, but also resources beneath and on top of the land. Meanwhile, some Liberians are praising the passage of the land rights bill.
If a property is deeded to the original people, the traditional people, the aborigine of a particular, it should be their decision to say we give concession. But as we have it now, the government can decide we give you 500 hectares of land without the consent of the local people. So yes, the Land Act seeks to address those critical issues that has to do with our people, especially the rural people.
So how can this help foster development in the country?
Because people now will have a say in what is the right.
Land conflict is one of the threats ordinary Liberians face because of the absolute power given to previous governments to own all public and private land. Local communities demanding benefits from their land have often clashed with concession companies over the use of their land. The new land law has now been sent to President George Weah for his signature. Moses Gazil, VOA Daybreak Africa, Monrovia, Liberia.
Chinese President Xi Jinping offered $60 billion in loans for Africa on Monday and wrote off some debt for poorer African nations. China has denied engaging in debt trap diplomacy. While speaking at the opening of a major summit with African leaders, Xi promised development that people on the continent could see and touch. VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo reports.
Addressing African leaders in Beijing, Chinese President Xi Jinping said the new package would include $15 billion in aid, along with interest-free and concessional loans and special funds for China-Africa development. And he pushed back on accusations that China was engaging in debt trap diplomacy.
Government debt from China's interest-free loans due by the end of 2018 will be written off for indebted poor African countries, as well as for developing nations and the continent's interior and small island nations.
He says his country is determined to not impose its will nor interfere in Africa's internal affairs or attach any political strings when offering support to the continent.
China will also expand its imports from Africa, especially for non-resources products, and will facilitate African financial institutions' bond issuance in China.
The package is in addition to an earlier pledge of $60 billion the Chinese president announced at a previous Sino-Africa summit in 2015. Speaking at the Forum on China-Africa Cooperation, South African President Cyril Ramaphosa says the focus is on making tangible improvements to the quality of life for Africans.
In the values that it promotes, in the manner that it operates, and in the impact that it has on African countries, FOCAC refutes the view that a new colonialism is taking hold in Africa, as our detractors would have us believe.
China has loaned about $140 billion to African countries between 2000 and 2017, according to data from Washington's Johns Hopkins University School of Advanced International Studies. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
This week, Bisi Alimi and his husband became the first gay couple to be interviewed together on a Nigerian television platform. Alimi is a Nigerian gay rights activist based in London who was back in Nigeria for work when the television invite came. He spoke to Ricky Stryak about the progress that has been made for LGBTQ rights in Nigeria and what remains to be done.
It's very surreal for me as well, and to have the opportunity to actually have a TV station that is bold enough to want to put the two of us on the screen and talk to us about our lives, our relationships, our aspiration, our hopes, and just do the interview like you will interview heterosexual couples, basically. And it was great.
We talked probably around 6 years ago, and you are an activist in London. Did you think 6 years ago that this would happen? How do you feel about this?
I'm completely shocked. I wouldn't lie to you, because this is how it happened. My husband had never been to Nigeria before, and I was coming. I come to Nigeria quite often, and I was coming back for the work that I do here. And I remembered while I was planning, he told me, said, I would love to go to Nigeria with you. And you would not imagine what my face was like. I was like, no, you're not coming to Nigeria with me at all. That is not even possible. And he was like, no, I really want to come to Nigeria. You've said so much about this place. I've never been. It's where you come from. And we came here. And, you know, like the question that you ask, if he had said that 6 years ago, I would have said no. No matter how much you'd have wanted, I would have said no. But I started seeing things are changing gradually. So like I said, I come to Nigeria twice a year, and sometimes I will walk down the street and people will stop me. They will recognize me and they will want to take pictures. They want to talk to me. People come into my inbox and talk about their relationship, their aspiration for life. And I felt that there's something shifting. So, you know, in part of the work that we are doing, is letting same-gender loving couples in Lagos, in Abuja, across Nigeria know that their love is valid. And though it might be hard for them to live it openly, but that there will be a time where they will be celebrated for loving who they love. And basically, that was why we agreed to do the interview.
So do you think it's shifting?
Well, I think it's shifting, but this is quite contagious to say that, because I can say this with all the privilege that I have.
You're well known, so that's privilege, but also your husband is white. Do you think that there is some kind of privilege or safety in that fact, you guys having citizenship in other countries?
He's more accepted here in Nigeria than I am. And every time I post our pictures, even people that will cuss me, that will swear at me, will show a level of respect towards him. And that is a privilege of his whiteness, you know. And you're right to call that out. And also you're right to point out that now I don't live in Nigeria anymore. When I used to live in Nigeria, I used to be poor. I wouldn't consider myself as poor anymore. So there's that economic currency. So there are a lot of currencies that I have. And so that's why I said getting better is related. But to the boys that are poor, to the girls that are struggling on the mainland in Lagos or in a village somewhere, they will not feel the change as much as someone with lot of money or class we feel. But does that mean that things are not shifting? Yes, they are.
That was B.C. Alimi, head of the B.C. Alimi Foundation. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Lagos, Nigeria. Fall armyworms are on the march across Africa. Agriculture experts say the pests could cause more than $13 billion in crop losses this year. To stop them, scientists are researching pesticides, landscape management methods, and genetically modified crops. Fifth Lapidus reports on an effort to find a sustainable approach that does not use pesticides.
Armyworms have been found in more than 35 sub-Saharan African countries in the past year and are now threatening millions of farmers in Asia after the first reported infestation in India. They mainly feast on maize, but they attack 80 other crops, including sorghum, cotton, rice, and sugarcane.
It's a really serious threat. It's been estimated that it could cause 20 to 50% crop losses of the maize crop, which is the main subsistence cereal crop which the farmers are, and the population in general are relying on for their food supply.
At Keele University in England, Toby Bruce and his team are taking a multi-pronged approach to fighting the pest.
We're looking at the crop variety, seeing if we can get more resistant crops. Then secondly, we're looking for repellent intercrops that can be used as a kind of push to push the pest away. And then we're also looking for attractive track crops. That's the third thing, so you can divert the insect to another area away from the crop. And fourthly, we're trying to increase the abundance of the natural enemies. So these are the predators which attack the pest.
They're hoping to amplify the chemical that plants release when they're attacked by armyworms. The pest predators tune into that.
They use those odors for finding their prey, and we want to improve that so that we can have varieties that are better at attracting these natural enemies and increasing the biological control that way.
Meanwhile, African farmers are removing the pests by hand and using homemade remedies like a solution of water, pounded chili pepper, and salt to repel the worms. I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Both houses of the Liberian legislature have now passed the long-awaited land rights bill, which gives citizens the right to own their land and its resources. The House of Representatives gives its final approval yesterday, Tuesday, following a unanimous vote. The bill now goes to President George Weah for his signature. A member of the Democratic Republic of Congo's youth movement, known as Lucha, or the Struggle for Change, says the Congolese people, not the Electoral Commission or the courts, should choose their own candidates. This comes after the country's high court this week sided with the Electoral Commission to exclude Jean-Pierre Bemba from participating in the December presidential election. The court cited Bemba's conviction at the International Criminal Court. A spokesman for Cameroon's Ambazonia Secessionist Movement says the group does not recruit child fighters. The group is fighting for the independence of Cameroon's northwest and southwest English-speaking regions. A report Tuesday said five students went missing and their principal badly wounded after unidentified gunmen attacked a high school near Bamenda, the capital of the Northwest Province. The Cameroon government has in the past called the secessionist movement a terrorist group. And that's it for this Wednesday, September 5th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Greg Burns, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.